if a woman becomes pregnant and she's eligible for Medicaid, it still takes up to 2 months to actually get the Medicaid card and be able to use the insurance. And so often it's the second trimester before a woman even receives prenatal care. And that's really unacceptable.
Alrighty, kiddos, welcome in to another fantastic week of your favorite and most smoothly run podcast this side of the Mississippi. It is Alabama Politics This Week, brought to you by Wind Creek Entertainment. I am Josh Moon, and that is
David Person.
How are you, David?
Man, I'm good. It's a nice day today, and we've got some interesting things to talk about.
We do indeed. I'm probably going to get myself in some trouble, but that's okay. I might be protest outside my house. Before we get into all that though, and before we lose, from whatever I say, we need to tell you about our friends at Wind Creek Entertainment that sponsored this fine podcast. They have 3 great locations in this state that you can go and visit. I've mentioned several different times now to break up your beach trip by stopping by in either Wetumpka, Montgomery, or Atmore. Stay overnight in one of those places, and I mean it would. I honestly can't think of a better way to break it. If I were going to break up the trip, that's 100% the way I'd do it. I'd go to Atmore, cause I've got a few more things to do. My little girl, she loves to go bowling for some reason or another. So we would absolutely go down there, and hang out, and they're great. They have fantastic amenities. They've got a great spa. They got great restaurants. They have, lots of fun games to play, inside the casino area, for those over 21. And so you can enjoy yourself, and everything is first class and well done. Just look them up online at Wind Creek Entertainment. You can find them. You can find a nice spot, book you a reservation, break up that trip. Don't drive the whole way and get there all angry and stuff. Stop, have a nice steak at the restaurant, and then, get a massage. You will absolutely enjoy it, and you'll have a good time doing it. All right, let's get into the Middle East. Here on Alabama Politics This Week. The reason that we wanted to discuss this a little bit is we were looking at what Senator Tuberville and Senator Katie Britt came out with this week. Did they sponsor, or did they just sign on to this bill, David? I can't remember what the headline was on that. I know that they're very supportive.
They co-sponsored this bill that was introduced by Tom Cotton, the Arkansas extreme MAGA guy. And they're calling it the No Bailouts for Campus Criminals Act. Now, first of all, what the heck? Campus criminals?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems to me, all right, so here's the synopsis of the bill. It would prevent anybody convicted of a federal or state level offense committed at a protest at a university or college from having their student loans forgiven. Here's my problem with it. All right, first of all, this whole very right-wing punitive tendency to label people and put them in a box and keep them there, you know, and I frame it that way because they're saying, all right, you do something, you're convicted of doing something when you're in your, let's say your 20s, right, as a college student. And so you're supposed to then carry the burden of that for another 30 years. I mean, that's not fair.
No.
That's not fair. People often change, you know, who they are and mature, you know, over time. I mean, that's what happens to most of us.
No, not me, David. Just last night, I went out and drank a 24-pack and ate 37 hot wings, okay? So I know that I'm the same guy I was in college, okay?
Well, okay, present company excluded then. But, I mean, the idea that, somebody did something that they feel is so politically offensive and maybe even deserving of a conviction, should then have to, that goes against, to me, that goes against the spirit of what is supposed to be happening with the justice system, which is, you know, you punish people for things that they have justifiably earned a punishment for, but then you allow them to live their lives and to grow and to change and mature and become better citizens. This is saying, nah, you screwed up when you were 20, 25, yeah, let's say, and now 55, you know, we still want you saddled with the burden of your student loans and, you know, and along with the conviction, which of course is going to be there anyway. Right. I just think I find that very problematic, overly punitive, overreaching.
Absolutely. Yeah. We agree 100% on this. I mean, obviously it's a tactic that they're using, to try and scare people out of holding these protests, out of, you know, can I say though, that we should approach some of this with a bit of nuance, all right? And not necessarily this bill, okay? And because I'm supportive of the kids to go and protest. Protest whatever the hell you want to protest, okay? Protest at what? However, if those crazy people can march in Charlottesville with their tiki torches and chant, "The Jews will not replace us," and that be allowed, okay? Then so kids can get out on the campus quad and hold protests about something that they feel like is a moral injustice that's happening somewhere else in the world that the United States is participating in. All right. That's well within their rights. That said, some of the blocking of other students from going to certain portions of the campus that's taking place, some of the things where they're forcing people to take a side on things, you know, and otherwise they're limited in where they can go and what they can do. I got a problem with that. And I think those folks, there should be some sort of legal action taken against them, arrest or what have you. Now, I don't think anybody should be slammed to the ground and pepper sprayed in front of everybody as what's happening. I think there are levels to this, man. Come on. But you know, I'm perfectly supportive of their rights to protest and draw attention to this and let people know that a large portion of this country don't want us involved in what's going on, you know, in that area of the world. And with those, I just don't think that you can treat them that way. And I don't think they should treat others in the way that they have treated some. And, you know, I go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I think one thing we have to remember, Josh, you know, is that there were good people in Charlottesville. There were good people carrying tiki torches.
That's true. They're on both sides.
That's right. There are good people on both sides. So let's remember, just like there were good people in Charlottesville with the tiki torches saying the Jews will not replace us, there are good people down in Tuscaloosa or wherever it may be who are blocking people and violating laws, right? Okay, so now that I'm finished being facetious, let me say, I agree with you that if young people in the course of their protest are violating a law, you know, a campus law or a city or state law, county law, arrest them. Mm-hmm. Sure, arrest them. And let them go through the court system. You know, my contention is, however, this added burden that Britt and Tuberville are trying to place on these young people.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be with them for 20, 30 years or really actually, you know, maybe even longer in some cases, you know, depending upon how much school they do and so forth. Mm-hmm. It's not fair. It's not a fair thing to do. And I think they should have the same opportunity to grow and mature and to rectify whatever missteps they may have made in the course of protest that everybody else would have. Mm-hmm. And let me also throw this in. During the civil rights movement, people went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
People were convicted of crime. And it was expected that that's what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It was expected. Dr. King served time in jail. You know, students protesting during that time, they were prepared to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this generation could stand to learn from the civil rights movement and understand that, you know, their protest, I think, should be peaceful. But sometimes violating the law is a right thing to do, and unjust law is a right thing to do. And also paying the penalty for that is part of the righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's part of what helps you to keep the moral high ground. It's mm-hmm. part of what is efficacious in this whole process.
Yeah, and you know, and I'll say too that you know, just to Britt and Tuberville, you know, part of the you know, the other side of the civil rights movement was you know, their plan was to arrest people and put these permanent marks on their record to make them unemployable, to label them as troublemakers and to make it to where they could not land jobs around town and it would affect them, you know, perpetually throughout the rest of their lives. And that was a big key to this thing. It was a reason why they started rounding folks up and charging them with bogus things, was because they knew that it would harm them financially for years. And it was a group of people that could least afford to be harmed financially. And it's kind of the same way with these kids. You know, you're talking about a bunch of kids that are going to come out with a huge amount of student debt, more than likely. I mean, if they're in college, it's going to be a huge amount of student debt. And so it's, you know, you're asking them, you know, to shut up and be quiet about something that they have every right to protest. And, you know, I've never truly educated myself. I mean, I have a decent understanding of what's taking place between, you know, the two entities there in Israel and Palestine that they're, you know, that are fighting and have been forever or for a long time, and the histories that led them to this. And so I have an understanding of it, but I've never really just, you know, drilled down into it and studied it for a length of period of time. And the reason I can't is because I find it so ridiculous. Honestly, I find the whole thing so utterly ridiculous. This made up reason for these two groups of people fighting each other, you know, and just continuing to do
that. What do you mean by that? What do you mean?
I'm just talking the religion. All right. The religion. Of okay. It all. And you know, and I just, and they, you know, this person decided this was a holy place and the other person decided it was their holy place. And you know what I mean? It just for somebody like me. I respect your religion, all right? I do. But when we're carrying forward with the killing of young kids and, you know, innocent women and children and things, you know, just on both sides of this, you know, for so many years. And listen, I understand that what Hamas did was wrong. I mean, that's the only way you can say it's wrong and they deserve to be punished. And, you know, if you wanted to find their camps and, you know, rain missiles down on them, nobody would have had a word to say about any of that ever. But some of the other things, when you start bombing the hospitals and you start bombing the camps and, you know, and you get the photos and the pictures of the young children that are dead and or suffering and dying, and you, it's pretty clear that you've bombed the wrong places, or the, you know, might have been the place you wanted to bomb because you wanted to send a message, you know, or whatever, because you don't really give a shit about those people. It's so, I don't even know of a proper word. To me, it's so unfathomable that you would do that to each other. I just can't wrap my head around this, the willingness to kill one another over this. Right. What are you doing?
Well, I think it's a little, from my vantage point, Josh, it's more complicated than that.
I
do think you're right when you say that religion plays a role in it. But I think what this really, at least from where I sit, this whole war that has been going on, for I guess 80 some odd years or so, going back to the founding of the state of Israel, is due to the fact that it's a battle. I think it's a battle first and foremost over land.
Oh yeah, certainly.
I think the religion shapes the conversation.
But it's the Holy Land. You know, it's the Holy Land. It's the holy sacred land, and that's the reason it's such a
But it's also about the displacement of people.
Sure.
In my mind, it's about the fact that that the world powers of the time got together. The post World War II world powers got together and decided that they were going to, relocate people of Jewish faith and European descent from Germany and other parts of Europe into the Holy Land, as we call it, and they did it in such a way, again, from my understanding and my vantage point, they did it in such a way that they disregarded the will and the needs of the people who were there. And that to me is where fundamentally this thing has been problematic and moved really from being problematic to being immoral. I think Jimmy Carter and others who have been trying to rigorously, and I almost said religiously, pursue a two-state solution, are right on the money in terms of what is the best thing to do at this point. You know, we can't change the fact that that original displacement happened. Okay, it happened. It shouldn't have happened in the way it happened, as far as I'm concerned. But that's can't undo that. Mm-hmm. I don't think.
Right.
But what you can do is create space, fair, equitable space and treatment for the Palestinian people. And that's really what this is about to me, even more than religion, in my mind.
That's all fair. It's all very fair. It just, to me, there's
my position to talk about the protest. And so my position is, I understand what the kids are talking about. All right. I understand why they're protesting it. They don't like that the U.S. is involved in an action that is causing such a catastrophic human destruction. Okay. And that's perfectly fine. And I understand that. That said, I also know that what happened with Hamas and the way that that went down, the original attack, that was terrible. Okay. Absolutely. It was awful, and it deserved retribution for what happened. It's kind of like 9/11. You know, I'm with you on 9/11, through the invasion of Afghanistan and chasing after bin Laden and running, bombing those caves and all that. I'm with you, man. But the trip over to Iraq, I don't know what the hell's happening anymore, and it's the kind of the same way here. I'm with you following those guys back over and weeding out the camps and doing what needs to be done. But when you take it the step farther and you start punishing the entirety of the people who are there, the peaceful people who have, while they certainly don't agree with what's happened to them and where they are, have not done anything, to you, and are living their lives, and you're destroying theirs. That's a bridge too far. And I don't think the U.S. ought to be involved in it either. Helping Israel protect itself. Okay. I also think that the same courtesy should be extended. I don't know, man. It just, to me, I get so utterly sick of the devaluing of human life, over indifferences that, even if we're talking about the land and the displacement, at this point in time, make a deal and move on, make a deal
and find some way to protect the people that who are there and stop this.
Well, you know, I think the challenge is that the cultures, and this is another way that I think the religion of the areas, or I'll say the interpretation and application of religion in those areas, geographical areas, comes into play. You have people who, I think, because of their religious culture, they believe that every, you know, this is a, I'm trying to frame this and say it in the right way. This is a situation where, well, let me, maybe this is the best way to put it. So in the New Testament, Jesus Christ said, turn the other cheek, right? Yeah, people are familiar with that concept. The idea that if you are hit, if you are violated, that there is room to respond in a way that does not involve retaliation. And that, and the logic of it is, and this is counterintuitive, but the logic of it is that by not responding in kind, violence for violence, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, to co-opt some other old phrases, it will stop the violence. But what we've had here is 80 years, again, give or take 80 years, of continuous violence, because the thinking is not turn the other cheek. The thinking is, you strike me, I'm going to strike you. You kill 10, I'm going to kill 100. Mm-hmm. You know, and this has been going on back and forth. Now, I'd say juxtapose that with what happened in South Africa. Juxtapose that even to some degree with what happened in the United States of America, whether you're talking about the Civil War or the Civil Rights Movement. At a certain point, I mean, I think it's been proven historically. At a certain point, the tit for tat approach to if you want to call it justice, or to responding to violence, is just not going to work.
No,
it doesn't change anything. Mm-mm. It just perpetuates things.
Yeah,
and as I think Dr. King said, if we continue with this approach of an eye for an eye, then we're eventually both going to be blind. That's a yeah. rough. That's a very rough paraphrase of what he said, but I think there's truth there. Mm-hmm. And this is what I think our people. And when I say our people, I mean the people of the Middle East who are our brothers and sisters by, you know, as human beings, they are missing. So what you're talking about isn't going to be resolved unless and until somebody decides that that last killing or that last onslaught, we're not going to respond with violence. We're going to respond with a plea for peace and reconciliation. We're going to turn the other cheek. I know that sounds simple to a lot of people, but especially for those of us who say we believe in the Bible or believe in Christianity, then tell me, how would you make an exception here? How would you say, how would you invalidate what Jesus said? If you say you believe in what Jesus said, then how do you not apply it to this situation?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's the, you know, like I said, I know some people are going to disagree with me, and that's perfectly within your rights to do so. I like I said, I understand it's a passionate sort of thing for a lot of folks, and I get it. I get it. Why? It's literally life and death. And, but you know, it strikes me as so, I'll choose a simple word. It strikes me as so sad that there is such a lack of value placed upon human life by two groups of people who claim to be fighting over a religion that teaches very much so to value human life.
I think that there, what needs probably going to have to happen is during a time of not necessarily peace, but quiet, there's going to have to be a deal struck by adults. And, you know, the way that it has in all those situations that you mentioned, they come together and push the zealots out, to the side, to the fringes, and they made a deal and the deal stuck. For the most part, of course, we see the zealots slowly claw their way back in, as we see in this country, but it's still, you know, for the most part, the deal is still sticking together. And maybe something similar one day will happen there, and we can stop this just absolute carnage of people. I just want everybody to stop killing each other, man. That's my position. Just want y'all to stop killing each other. So, hey, leave them kids alone. All right, we're gonna slide out of here. We come back. We're gonna talk to Marilyn Lands about her first few weeks in the Alabama legislature and a bill that she has. I mean, she's already doing good work. We knew when we sent her there that she was gonna do some really good work, and she's already off and running. So we'll come back in just a minute. Alabama Politics This Week, brought to you by Wind Creek Entertainment. Back in a moment. Welcome back, Alabama Politics This Week. Josh Moon, David Person, and we are happy now to have with us again. Now we can officially say, This is a change. We've never said it before. Representative Marilyn Lands is with us. How are you, Ms. Lands?
I'm doing very well and very glad to be here with y'all today.
We're going to get into the legislation and stuff, but before we do that, I just wanted to ask, how has the first few weeks of this new gig been treating you?
Very well. This is officially, I think, my sixth week. It's gone by very fast and furious, but it's been good. I've been very warmly welcomed on both sides of the aisle and have been speaking from the floor a number of times already. So I'm trying to build relationships and work together with people. But I had to tell my colleagues the other day that I am a bit confused since I've been down here, that I feel a bit like Alice in Wonderland, because it didn't take long for me to realize that I'm a conservative. You know, I just always believed that the Republicans stood for small government, which I actually agree with. We know that smaller is more efficient for the most part, but we can't get there from here in this current environment when Alabamians are not making a living wage. That's simply not possible. But the amount of government overreach that we're seeing, and I always thought Republicans were about less governmental interference. And here we are, and we're in your bedroom, in your bathroom, in your school, in your church, and now we're in your kitchen and in your fridge. And it's like, what's next? Is there anything left? And
Love it.
Yeah. So, but we're trying to do what we can to at least bring attention to the issues as they come up, and hope that, especially in 2026, that we'll be able to take a few more seats and break this supermajority, because that's what it's all about. You know, anytime you have such an unbalanced power structure, one side's gonna push the limits.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I was going to ask again before we get into the legislation and stuff. Alice, has there been anything that was a surprise to you? Something you thought it was going to be like going? I know you've had some experience working down there and being around it, but is there anything being in that position that's been a surprise to you?
A number of things. I think, you know, it's both everything I expected it to be, and then it's none of what I expected it to be. But I think the biggest surprise to me has been how much levity there is on the House floor and how well everyone gets along.
Yeah.
And that most of the bills, you know, are passed unanimously. And it's just the issues, which are big issues to me. It's there aren't that many issues where we are divided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right. It's almost I've compared it sometimes to a college football game where you have all of these very passionate people sitting around the edges of the field, and then you have these folks in the middle that are kind of going at it, and then at the end of the game they kind of come together and they shake hands and they're telling jokes and everybody's laughing and hugging, and they're making plans to go out to eat with each other later, and you realize that. You know, that there's a way, a professional way to do this. And that's kind of the way that it's being done. But it is striking to see it up close and personal and realize, oh, they don't actually hate each other. At least some of them don't. Some do. Some actually do hate each other. But, you know, it's interesting. But all right, let's I know you have a bill that we're not going to get to it this session. But it'll be coming back around next year, and I know that's what you were kind of hoping to do was kind of prime it for next session. Tell me what it does. I know it deals with maternity issues and how we provide for new mothers. You know, just kind of explain what the bill is.
Sure. So HB 494 is the Alabama Maternal Health Care Act, and basically it provides presumptive eligibility for Medicaid for pregnant moms. And under the current system, if a woman becomes pregnant and she's eligible for Medicaid, it still takes up to 2 months to actually get the Medicaid card and be able to use the insurance. And so often it's the second trimester before a woman even receives prenatal care. And that's really unacceptable, especially when you look at our maternal outcomes here in this state. And the statistics are pretty alarming, especially for our Black women. The maternal mortality rate is just unacceptable. And I think this is a step in the right direction to begin to really help our mothers and our families.
So I noticed, Marilyn, in the op-ed piece that you wrote, you mentioned not only Black women, but also Hispanic women. In fact, the rate for Hispanic women was even higher than the rate for Black women. So for women of color, this is a crisis. What's at the root of this, do you think? Is this just historic discrimination? Are we talking about systemic racism? What are we talking about here?
That's a good question. And I think a lot of it hinges on the fact that we have an expanded Medicaid. Healthcare outcomes are really dire for a lot of Alabamians, particularly in the rural parts of our state. And they're getting worse. And I just believe that we have to, first of all, expand Medicaid. That's something that I still can't believe hasn't happened yet. And we keep hearing it's going to happen, but it doesn't. And so I'm looking for ways that we can at least go in, and particularly in the area of women's issues, because I'm passionate about that. And just looking at the numbers, especially the numbers of, I think it's fully 11% of women receive no prenatal care. And that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Because we know there's much better outcomes when you get good prenatal care. And every mom and every child deserves that.
And I would argue that not only is it a matter of people deserving it because they are human beings, but the for selfish reasons, society ought to want this, because if women are getting the prenatal care that they need, then that means the children are more likely to be born healthy and robust, which means then that they will, at least theoretically, cost less to take care of as they grow up. I mean, is that not so?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember going through this with my daughter when she was born a few years ago, and just some of the things that they tell you I mean, it just it's not, you know, in that setting, this is not a political discussion, you know, that you're having with the doctors and folks there. You know, they're just telling you facts about what, you know, listen, if you do these things, you know, you keep a healthy diet as a mom, you know, you come in for your checkups, you do these things, we will monitor you, and then we'll give you certain amount. You know, my wife had to take some supplements and things like that, you know, to help make sure that the baby was going to be healthy when born, because if not, you know, here are the consequences, and they just kind of laid out, you know, what the consequences could be long term. And so this is not a matter of debate, you know, it's not a matter of politics or anything. It's just the reality and why we are refusing. I mean, I've got some ideas, but why? Because it doesn't affect, you know, the people who affect policy, you know, really. I mean, that's it. It's just we don't have, if we were arguing about whether or not we could send these newly born kids to a private school, we would probably have a lot of people on board. But, you know, that's not where we are, right?
No, unfortunately, it's not. And I also think that one of the key pieces to this is really being able to identify pre-existing conditions like high blood pressure and diabetes, which often women aren't going to the doctor to start with, particularly when they can't afford it, don't have insurance, and they may not even know that they have high blood pressure. And so as a woman becomes pregnant, to know that and to be able to take care of that, so that we can manage the pregnancy in as safe and effective way as possible.
You know, Marilyn, I really love the fact that you have come up with this legislation. What's the reaction of your colleagues in the House?
Well, I have to tell you, we already have bipartisan support for this bill. And that was really important to me, and particularly from the women. So it really resonates with the women because they understand it, and they understand how complicated pregnancy, even in the best cases, can be.
Great. And did you come into this? I'm trying to remember your platform. I don't remember this particular issue being part of your platform. Am I mistaken there, or has this been something that you've always been thinking about?
I've always spoken to the issue of maternal and infant mortality rates, and spoken up for our rural medical services. But certainly the largest part of my platform revolved around reproductive freedom.
Right. So you have come into the Alabama legislature and you figured out that this was something that you could do to help address an issue that's part of your platform, and then you're doing it, you're getting it done. I just think that's really awesome. That's great.
Well, I am very hopeful that we'll be able to pass this early in the session in 2025. Mm-hmm. And so looking forward to that, and we'll have time now while the session's out to really kind of meet with more of my colleagues and talk through the bill with them so that we're ready to go when we get back.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Hey, last thing here, we can get you out. And, because I wanted to ask you, you talked about, you know, breaking that supermajority, and, you know, you did very well, in this election, and running on issues, you know, specific to women and, you know, and that sort of freedom. And, you know, and I wrote a column earlier this week about, you know, why are women, you know, voting for Republicans at this point? And doing so, I was referencing Vivian Figure's bill about paid maternity leave and the resistance from the right to that bill. So I guess, do you feel like that people are starting to realize that y'all own, and I hate to say on the left, but on the Democratic side or wherever you're from, over here on this side, that's actually putting up bills that affect real problems and address real issues and talk about things that women care about. Do you feel like people are starting to realize that y'all are serious about this and that y'all are the better option?
I do. And I also think that voters are beginning to recognize that it's state and local races that really impact their day-to-day lives. And they're looking more at the candidates and at the issues, I think, on that level. So how well that will translate in November, I don't know. I'm hopeful. But I do think people are really starting to look at the issues. And I can tell you there was a completely different energy in our 2024 campaign than 2022. And I think it's because we shared my story and Alyssa's story. And because we shared those stories, I heard stories from so many other women and families. And it became a really deeply personal campaign. And I think we connected with people in a way that made them say, hey, there is something different. And at the moment, and I heard this over and over again, we've gone too far. We're fed up.
Mm-hmm.
We want something different.
Well, I hope that that is that's the case and it continues on. Yes. Although, I mean, you certainly, if we can't even get 8 weeks of maternity leave, you know what I mean? I mean, good Lord, for teachers, you know, I mean, what? I just don't understand. But listen, thank you again for coming on. Yeah, and thank you for what you're doing, and keep it up. And if we can be of any assistance here, you know where to find us, and we'll be happy to help in any way we can.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to see both of you very soon.
All right.
Okay, Marilyn.
Thank you. That is our representative, Marilyn Lands, and she is she's good. She is exactly who we thought she would be there, and that is a good thing. So it's nice to see. I hope that her election and the success that she's having there, kind of leads us down that pathway to breaking the logjam that is, you know, the Republican supermajority in that. And the legislative body.
Well, I'll just say this. I mean, even listening to her today, I realized that her candidacy has given us a new way to think about and talk about in political speech, I guess I should say, to message these issues. And I think Alabama Democrats have the potential now, because of what Marilyn has shown us, we have the potential, I think, to shift the paradigm just a little bit on the issue of women's reproductive rights. If we're smart, we're going to capitalize on this, and maybe even show the nation that there's a new way to talk and think about this issue.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I hope it shifts some. I hope that we get to a point where we have to, we have to compromise more. We have to deal with each other. We have to bring things at least more back towards the center of things and get away from some of this ridiculous right wing nonsense where we're, you know, trying to arrest librarians. You know, so, all right, let's get ourselves out of here. We'll come back in just a few minutes and we'll wrap this baby up. It's Alabama Politics This Week, brought to you by Wind Creek Entertainment.
If you're hearing my voice, that means you are a fan of Alabama Politics This Week. And I want to tell you how grateful I am that you listen and that you're engaged with what Josh and I talk about every week. So I want to ask you to continue listening and continue to support us, and definitely reach out with ideas, comments, suggestions. Your support makes a difference and it means a lot.
All righty. Welcome back. Alabama Politics This Week. Josh Moon, David Person. Thanks to Marilyn Lands for joining us. Also, thanks to the fine folks at Wind Creek Entertainment for sponsoring this, and thanks to the folks at SPLC for sponsoring as well. And they are will be back in a couple of weeks with another guest or two, and so we look forward to that. All right, let's quickly here before we close out. I wanted to bring up gambling and kind of what went on in the Senate. Or in the House and Senate, I guess, yesterday, which was Tuesday. We record this on Wednesdays, and on Tuesday there was
there was a big uproar because some folks were not going to approve an agricultural center. There was a big bunch of hoopla around this whole deal, and so let me kind of break down what took place. What generally happens in some of these situations is people don't realize this, but you have two kind of competing entities at the legislature with the House and the Senate. And a lot of times in the background, they don't really get along on certain things. The House will make changes to Senate bills. The Senate will make changes to House bills. They get irritated with one another. And so certain things happen. That happened in a very high profile case with the gambling bill. Earlier in this session, gambling bill went up past the House, went up to the Senate, and Senate just demolished it and did all sorts of different things. Really made the House angry, and then they sent it back down. They tried to come to a reconciliation. They could not come to a reconciliation over the bill, and it looks like gambling is dead for this session again. So that is not going to happen. And so in retaliation a bit, yesterday on Tuesday, the Senate had a bill that started out in the Senate for an agricultural center that was going to go in somewhere in Shelby County, I believe. And it was sponsored by Shea Shelnut in the Senate. And this bill was Alpha's baby. Okay, this Alpha is the Farmers Federation, is one of the, and they were one of the main opponents to gambling legislation. And they pulled a lot of votes off the gambling legislation. And so when this bill came up, it went down to the House. House made a couple of changes. It had to go back to the Senate. And in the Senate, they could not come to an agreement on those changes. Because they had something to do with minority investors in that, and or the minority appointments. And so they sent it to a conference committee. Well, after all the problems with the gambling bill on Tuesday, the House Speaker Nathaniel Ledbetter appointed, let me tell you what a conference committee is. A conference committee is essentially a group of six lawmakers, three from the House, three from the Senate. They come together over bills where have been changes made from one House to the other, and the two sides don't agree on the changes that were made. So they come together to try to iron out a compromise bill that everybody can live with. So on his on the House side, Ledbetter sent up to the conference committee Andy Witt and Sam Jones as two of the three folks that were going to go up there. Now, Andy Witt has been on this show. Sam Jones has been on this show. Both of them were major players in the construction of the gambling bill that passed out of there. So they just didn't make it to conference committee yesterday. They had other things going on, and who knows what happened, but they just didn't make it. And so it looked, for all intents and purposes, like the Ag Center bill was going to die. Now, it's my understanding that it may not end up dying. They may iron out a compromise at some point today and get it pushed through. But that's what it looked like yesterday, is that this was going to die. And so this is the politics that is played back and forth. But it does look like gambling is going to die. So, there are many reasons why gambling is going to die. I wrote about a lot of them today, or Wednesday story about what happened behind the scenes with this. And, it's a shame. It's not necessarily a shame that the final bill died. It's a shame that something didn't get passed. It's a shame that the original bill died, because it was going to be transformative for the state. It really was going to be a bill that did a lot of good things and didn't cost us a lot, in terms of what we were going to do. Matter of fact, it would have reduced the amount of gambling that's taking place now and would have created thousands and thousands of jobs, would have done so much for the state, would have added more than $1 billion in revenue every year. you know, for us to do a variety of different things with, like, you know, I mean, college scholarships, you know, school security, expansion of healthcare. There were so many different things that were coming through with this. And it just, you know, and it got up to the Senate where there was no leadership. And this is, you know, it died.
So here's what I don't understand. And, you know, a lot of what you just said, you wrote in your column. You know, you talked about 40,000 plus jobs. I think it was 46 or 45,000 jobs or something like that, that would have been created. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, that is an amazing level of economic impact. Mm-hmm. You talked about hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more, you know. Again, an amazing level of economic impact. My question is, what politician in her or his right mind would not want to be associated with that kind of transformative change? I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. Who would blow this opportunity? And why? I don't understand. I don't understand, and I continue to be baffled by the idea that the politicians of this state do not want to profit from something that it's obvious the people of this state want, and their dollars show it. The way they cross the state lines to buy lottery tickets and to go to casinos and. Or even to go to mm-hmm. casinos, the legal casinos in the state. It shows it. That's what people want. So what is the problem?
Well, that is a complicated question. All right. So I can tell you what happened. And so from that, maybe we can better understand what the problem is. But what happened was it went to the Senate where there was no leadership really to keep people in line. In the House, Nathaniel Ledbetter and Anthony Daniels had their folks in line. They knew it was coming. They had a plan. They had an outline. Everybody stuck to the plan. They had the votes lined up. They got it passed. In the Senate, they did not have that. Greg Reed did not have people lined up, even though he was in on this, just like everybody else was from the very beginning. The Senate had all the input in the world like the House did. You know, it was still that leadership was not there. And so when it got up there, there were a lot of opportunities for lobbyists and other folks to come in and say, hey, you know, it would be a shame if you found a primary opponent in the upcoming election. It would be a shame if you ruined your chance to move up into the lieutenant governor spot, or if you ruined your chance to move up into head of ALDOT, or if you ruined, you know, because we have that sort of sway here because we are Alpha, we are, you know, the Alabama Policy Institute, you know, sort of thing. We can influence people to do these things. Or we can back an opponent for you and make sure that your political career is essentially over, in the upcoming election, because, you know, it's one Republican's good as the other now these days, because most people don't even know who you are. So those sorts of things had a way of taking hold there, and they didn't get the cover that they needed, the protection that they needed from leadership in the Senate, like they did in the House, where House leadership said, "Don't listen to that shit. We're going. You want to hold on. You want to hold on to your committee assignments and things like that. The stuff that, you know, you want all the projects to keep going to your district. You want to make sure that Don't worry about them. We'll back you with our money over there in these races. Don't worry about that." And so those things were covered. They didn't have that in the Senate. And so slowly they started picking people off. I mean, first of all, gambling is a bit of a controversial issue anyway. And so you're going to have a set number of people who just aren't going to be in favor of it regardless. And so you're going to have a number of people, that are on the fringe. And those are the people that you can pick off one at a time, one side or the other. In the House, and Nathaniel Ledbetter was able to pull him over to the side where he needed to vote. In the Senate,
That never happened. And so they were able to be, you know, gamed by that side. And so what it resulted in was them saying, we'll pass some gambling, but it's going to be our kind of gambling. We're not going to pass all these casinos and things and totally up in the state and do all this stuff. And so they wanted to create their own bill. And so that's what they did. They created their own bill, and it was a worthless piece of trash. Mm. I mean, it was a trash bill. And then at the same time, you know, once you do that, so man, it gets so complicated because you have these entities that are involved in this, the dog track owners, casino owners that are already here operating, and the Porch Creeks, who are there. And typically those two groups have been at odds with one another, and the people who are interested in stopping gambling are you know, they just played them off of one another.
All right.
Well, those folks for the last several years have been together.
Yeah.
And so that's caused a bit of more of a problem. And so the whole idea this time around was to separate them, figure out a way to separate them. And that's what the Senate did.
All right. So let me ask you before we have to get out of here, let me ask you real quickly then. You mentioned Alpha and the Alabama Policy Institute. What do those entities have against gambling? What's their problem with gambling in the state?
You know, I can't put a real finger on Alpha's problem with gambling overall. I do know one of the things that they were trying to push through was their own health insurance plan that they were going to be able to offer to farmers there that it was a plan that would have fallen outside the rules of Obamacare. So it would not have been governed by the same rules that Obamacare plans have to go through. Therefore, it would have been a lot cheaper for some of these plans because they wouldn't have covered shit. And so the Medicaid and healthcare expansion plans that were a part of this gambling thing would have caused probably a problem for them because it would have sucked up some of the people that would have qualified for their health insurance plan. Now, that said, they denied that openly and in fairness to Alpha, they have always been against gambling. You know, they have fought gambling. And from what I understand from a lot of people who've been around is it's just simply a power thing. They see introducing gambling as a way to introduce more power players in the state and to reduce their effectiveness in how they lobby. The Policy Institute, I think we could probably look at who funds the Policy Institute if they would ever, you know, show who does that. And I think we would probably find some answers into why they're so dead set against gambling.
Okay.
So, and listen, there are a lot of outside entities that poured money into this fight, poured money into it.
So it's
because people in Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, they want to keep those Alabama dollars rolling in.
Sure.
You know, they want us to continue sending their kids to college.
So it's never going to happen, basically, right? I mean,
it ain't going to happen for a long time now.
Yeah, this was probably our best chance. I mean,
we'll probably get sports wagering next year and as a standalone entity, and then that'll be it for a while.
Well, I know that you have done extensive reporting on this, and I think it makes you really an authoritative voice. So if you're saying sports wagering is coming, I'm going to say okay, because you're saying it, I'm going to say okay. But I got to be honest with you, deep in my heart, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, because we've been having this debate easily.
Well, we already have the daily fantasy sports stuff, and so, you know, the other's not far removed from that. And I think a lot of people had their eyes open to what's going on with sports wagering in this state, and so I think that's something that's probably coming as a standalone issue. And we'll see. I think they've got a pretty good shot at it. All right. Last thing, right wing note of the week is Greg Reed, and not for the gambling thing. Greg Reed blocked the transference of a bill from Vivian Figures that would have granted school teachers 8 weeks of maternity leave, 8 weeks of paid maternity leave. You know, listen, they just didn't have the money. You know, and when you send $100 million to pay for rich kids to go to private school, you don't have the money for it to let those teachers off for 8 weeks to raise their child.
Right.
You know, and so you know, this is the I wrote a column and I still don't understand it. I don't understand how women, and somebody reminded me this is white women you're talking about, how white women are still voting for Republicans. I don't understand it. I do not understand it.
Hey, no,
they don't care.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I don't get it either.
They don't care. They haven't cared. They've proven that they don't care. They don't want, they don't help in any way, shape, or form. Every time it comes, I mean, look at the, I mean, they did literal dances in the aisles over giving $100 million to rich people to send their kids to a private school. And when it come up to this, and it might have been up almost $50 million to pay for teachers to have babies and be home with them for 8 weeks. How do teachers, of all people, not have maternity leave? It's just mind-boggling to me. Mind-boggling to me that they don't have this. Poor Vivian Figures, and God bless her for bringing it and the work she did on it. It's just, God, it's atrocious. It's absolutely atrocious what they've done. And to set up and be phony and act like this, oh, it's all about, you know, this money. We just can't afford it. We just can't afford it. Oh, no. What can we do?
I learned a long time ago, people can afford whatever they want to afford. I learned that time ago.
Yep, you're right about that. All right, let's get ourselves out of here. We've given y'all enough for this week. If you're upset about my comments on the Middle East problem, send those to apwproducer@gmail.com, and our producer will get right on that answer to you. So, all right, till next week, y'all be safe out there.
Peace.